Visit our website at BostonBastardBrigade.com for recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the B3 crew.
Become friends with us on MySpace at MySpace.com/BostonBastardBrigade, as well as on Facebook. You can even find our Twitter accounts on our official homepage.
And don't forget to check out our friends at the Electric Sisterhood at ESH.MOBI for another side of news and review, including their own glorious podcast show.
The following a special Boston Bastard Brigade presentation. The Bastards, one-on-one with...
I am your tonic.
The Clicks.
We met about 2 years
ago. Whatever.
All right. Okay. King Davey Duck here with...
Menya.
And a pizza place right across the street from the Middle East on Sears. And we're joined by Tommy Boy Records and Silver Labels, The Clicks.
Hello.
Yes. How are you doing today?
We're really...
We're fantastic.
Discombobulated.
Yes. Now, how was the show last night? You played at the Knitting Factory in New York, my favorite club over there.
Right on. It was great. It was fantastic.
Awesome.
It was.
And how was, like, the fan reaction to the new group?
Well, one time I was on stage, I actually wanted them to, like, mellow up because it was hurting my ears.
So that's a good thing.
Yes.
No, everyone has been super, super supportive, and I think overall we had a sort of eyebrow-raising reaction from people who were like, damn, like, that's sort of like a new level of power and dynamic sort of thrust to it, so that's great. Yeah, this is actually really our only third show together, and we've had 3 rehearsals.
Yeah. One per show.
Right. One, two, three, go! So this is like very new for us as it is for the crowd, but a sensational experience.
Yeah.
I like the term dynamic thrust.
That's right.
Dynamic thrust.
Yeah, it sounds really sexual.
Well,
very
right. Innuendo.
Yeah.
It makes it so much more interesting for me.
Anyway.
Now, 2009 has definitely been an interesting year for the Clicks. There were some highs and there were some lows.
Dun, dun, dun.
How would you rate this year for the band and why?
To tell you the truth, I think this has probably been the greatest year for this band because I think a lot of things needed to happen in order for this to move to the next level, with me specifically being the founder of the band and the songwriter. And I think what was happening before was that we had members that just weren't happy to be where they were, and it becomes a stressful situation, not for, just for myself, but for them as well. And everybody has to find a way to happiness. And so I think that the best thing that could have happened. It was under bizarre circumstances, and, you know, the timing was odd. But, like, I have this total belief that when one door closes, another one opens. And I just think I opened one door and found myself the best band that I could find.
It's like the ultimate super group in the indie realm, in my opinion.
Oh, well, thank you.
Awesome.
It's been, like, a really big year for super groups, if you think about it. You've got, like, Spinnerette, you've got The Dead Weather, you've got Them Crooked Vultures.
Yeah.
It's truly been just a wondrous year for bands from, well, people from different groups coming together to make awesome music.
Cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. That was one thing about, like, the old jazz times, you know, when all these different players would play together and switch around, and you basically ride a creative arc with people.
The years of John Coltrane and Cole Porter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, everybody's sort of like, you get all these different influences and stages of growth, and when it's right to move to something else, you do it. Hopefully that's the way.
Yeah.
Definitely.
No, absolutely.
By your gut.
Awesome. Now, what makes the music of the Clicks great is that it doesn't have, like, a main demographic. Rather, you write and perform songs that everyone and anyone can relate and sing along to. Did you ever picture that your fan base would reach out that far, or did you think that you'd be held back by that old only for GLBT audience members sort of category?
Yeah. Well, I think that we definitely have a founding sort of audience that sort of comes from that that niche market. But I truly, truly believe that, just like you said, the music's written as sort of, it comes from a very universal place. And I'm really, really happy that people have actually, you know, when we go to our shows, there's a very obvious presence of the, you know, LGBTQ presence, but there's also other people, and I think that that's fantastic. And the fact that we've actually been able to step into sort of like a mainstream realm, you know, like, it's not every day that you turn on the TV and you go and watch MTV Subterranean and there's like a trans guy hosting it, you know what I mean? And I'm like,
awesome.
I'm like, that's pretty cool, you know? So that gives me a lot of hope that people, you know, are seeing beyond that.
Definitely. Now, Brian, you worked with...
I want to be the band.
You've worked with some very talented people in your music careers. One half of the Dresden Dolls, part of the World Inferno Friendship Society, recording with your friends in Human Wine, collaborating with Trent Reznor on the Nine Inch Nails album Ghost 1-4, and you've even did something with my pal Robbie Roadsteamer.
Yeah.
Now,
good chap.
Yeah, really good chap. Now, how does being part of the Clicks differ from these past experiences, and what sort of lessons have you brought to this band that you have learned from these previous acts?
Oh, wow. Well, good question, long answer.
I would say there was definitely something really important to be gained from all of the past experiences. I feel like every band that I've been in gives me, as a player, new levels of performance and playing to focus on, which have only helped me. Everything that I was able to learn and develop in Dresden Dolls helped me in Human Mind, which helped me in World Inferno, which helped, you know, and so on like that. So that's been a really nice progression. I feel like each new project is a great challenge. And personally, I feel like I've been able to kind of evolve from, you know, a young 20-something, pretty green, coming out of New Hampshire, to feeling like I've got a much stronger sense about all the other facets of playing music than just the show. I used to be really sort of insecure and unsure of myself in a lot of those ways, and I feel like playing with Lucas and Toby, it's everybody's very much on the same playing field. We've all sort of been out there and bring the level of enthusiasm to this experience, you know, from just the simplest, just the joy of like turning the amps up, to really getting out there and focusing on projects and touring and working together as a team, you know?
Definitely.
Focus.
Yeah. It's all about the focus. Now, how does it feel back to be back in the Middle East, to where you practically even started your own reputation?
It's great. My first experience with the Middle East was being 19 years old and going to my first punk show and kind of getting like the hairy eyeball from all the local punks of like, who's the new kid? And going like, oh boy, I'm in for it, to like, you know, spending like, what not, you know, 8 or 9 great years in Boston. And yeah, it's always fantastic to come back. The guy doing sound, Dave McNamara, has been one of my best friends since we were in the 3rd grade. So
amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's things like that that make coming back to Boston tremendous.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, Toby, I know that Brian and Lucas met through the True Colors tour and such, but where did you first cross paths with them, and what was it that made Lucas choose you to be the bassist?
Oh, wow. I play in another band in New York called Bambi, and my band Bambi actually opened for the Clicks, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah,
maybe. About 2 years ago at the Knitting Factory, oddly enough. Everything comes full circle. And we just kind of, you know, we basically generally met in that sense, and you know, just following the band and stuff, and then we have a mutual friend by the name of Amanda Arriaga, who through sort of Cindy Lauper knows Lucas and then also knows me, and then she was out to dinner one night with Cindy's manager, and you know, Lisa happened to mention that the Clicks were looking for a new bass player, and she was like, you know, Amanda, what about that friend of yours with the dreadlocks, you know, maybe she'd be good for that. And so Amanda called me up and I was like, yeah, and then we went, you know, Amanda's like, well, you know, Lucas is coming in town next week, you know, why don't we all go to dinner and you guys can talk. And then, you know, I walked in and Lucas was like, oh, I remember you. And then, you know, we had a couple of beers and chatted, and then, you know, at the end of the night, it's like, well, I got the show if you're interested, and, you know, and then it all kind of sort of gelled from there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And it worked out in the end.
It did.
Sure it did.
Now, I did want to ask you about the band Bambi, since a lot of people out there aren't quite familiar with them. I got a chance to listen to some new music on the MySpace. It sounded a lot like Iggy Pop meets Hedwig and the Angry Inch, but they actually Skids and Joan Jett for a good measure.
Yeah.
Where did Bambi first originate from, and how did you all come about finding this sound?
Well, we kind of started from, strangely enough, a girl who's no longer in the band. There's this girl who played in a band with our drummer, and they decided, you know, that band broke up, and they decided to start another band, and then so Kara and this girl, name happens to be Sandy, started looking for people, and Sandy knew Kevin, who's one of the singers, and then Kevin knew Jimmy, who's the guitar player, so he asked him to come in, and then a friend of mine was going to audition to be the second guitar player in the band, and he's like, oh, and they said they didn't have a bass player if you want to come along, and I was like, sure, so he didn't stay, I did stay, and then Sandy moved to Chicago, and then we got this girl, Hannah, and we kind of went on from there, and the band kind of, I mean, in terms of the sound, it's like, we come from incredibly, incredibly different backgrounds, so it's like, you know, I do like experimental music, the drummer is more like, you know, like pop punk, Kevin is really into like the Pretenders and Blondie and stuff, and Jimmy is like an old like metalhead, and you know, Hannah has never been in a band before ever, and it's like more of the sort of musical theater.
It sounds like a potluck of...
Yeah, no, totally, and it's like, you know, it's just, I mean, it took a while, it took a long time for us to kind of really find and develop like the kind of sound that we are, but I think that we've, you know, we finally kind of come on to something, and you know, just working on projects, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Now, Lucas, despite its title, Dirty King feels a bit more calm and soulful compared to your previous album, Snake House. When recording Dirty King, did you have a more composed mindset than your previous albums, or was it the opposite?
You know, it was the opposite. It wasn't that I wasn't composed in a way, or that I was composed in the first one, because I wasn't. When I wrote the music for Snake House, it was probably one of the most difficult periods of my life. But when I wrote, when I was writing for Dirty King, it was sort of like just a different sort of defunct feeling, probably as equally, but just coming from a different realm. I think what happened, and it, the reason I think it might sound a little bit more composed, was the fact that I worked with an amazing producer, Sylvia Massey, and she sort of gave me the freedom to feel like the music that I write that wasn't necessarily like a considered like a click song, that I should include songs like Emily or Red and Blue, which is the kind of music that I write all the time, but I sort of had this idea of what was a click song and what was a song that I would write to sort of put to the side in case I wanted to do sort of
solo,
like
a solo,
exactly. So that was sort of like what I thought would be my solo stuff, and I never thought that it would fit in, but when I showed her the music, she was like, no, she was like, no, this is really good stuff, and I was like, all right. So then that's when I sort of came to terms with understanding that, you know, in her words, that a song that I write is a click song. And I was like, okay. And I think that that's where that composure came from. It's just understanding that I just needed to be solid in understanding that any song that I write is worthy of being like a click song.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, you mentioned Sylvia Massey, and she's got quite the resume. Tool, System of a Down, Johnny Cash, Deftones. What was going through your mind when you were working with this person?
To tell you the truth, she is like the most down-to-earth sort of like, she's got this sort of like rock and roll mom kind of attitude. You see her, she's kind of got like this big blonde like hair. She looks like she just walked out of like an 80s hair magazine. And she's kind of talks like this. Hi, Lucas!
So,
she's really...
Sounds like Axl Rose. And
not quite. But she was super cool. She was really, really mellow, and she was just kind of like, she had this attitude that she really allowed the band and me as a songwriter the freedom to do what we do, and then we bring it in, and she came more from a very like sonic level where it was about getting the right sound to find the soul of the song. She really, I think maybe on one song she rearranged it, but the rest of the stuff it was like, just let the song shine as it is, and we're gonna build this, like construct from the song, instead of being like, let's rearrange change and do this and this and that. And so, yeah, it was pretty amazing to work with her because, yeah, I was sitting there and in the middle of, like, you know, a session, she'd like tell us a story about Prince, or I'd be told that I was playing like a guitar that Johnny Cash had played, you know, wow. and I'd be sitting there going, oh my God, I don't want to drop this, yeah. You know, things like that. It was pretty surreal.
Did you feel like an aura holding the guitar of Johnny Cash?
I actually did, and there was one specific guitar that actually kind of killed me. And a lot of people don't know this, but the studio that we went to is called Radio Star Studios. It's a little town called Weed, California. Yes, Weed, California. And it's haunted, and they have a million haunted stories there, and there's actually like a special on TV that's on now that has a story from there. But there's this one guitar, they call it the haunted guitar. It's this red guitar that used to belong to an old friend of Sylvia's, and they were in a band together, and she passed away, and the woman's husband, this was after years and years they had a band together, and the woman's husband showed up in Weed one day completely unannounced and said, you know, she wanted you to have this. Wow. So she brings her this guitar, and the engineer I was working with says that every single time somebody plays it, something weird happens. And usually they end up giving up because, like, one time this one guy, I can't remember who it was, I think was from this Canadian band, I'm totally forgetting their name, I put the guitar down, went to pick it up, and the thing kept slamming, like, the case kept slamming shut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, like, all these really, really weird things kept happening, and, like, one guy went to pick it up, and the strings popped in his hand, like, stuff like that.
Wow.
So I was, like, really weird, but there's a song on the album called Haunted.
Ooh.
And I thought, how appropriate would it be to play this song on it? So I go and I grab the guitar, pick it up, and I start playing it. And it was like the first take. We didn't have to meddle with the sound. We didn't have to do anything.
Wow.
It just and Mike, our engineer, was like, I think that's fine. Let's go double that. It was just like, he was like, and it was completely in tune. That's the weird thing. It had been sitting in its case for like ever, and I was like, oh, so you were waiting for me. Thank you. So I thought, yeah, it's like really interesting stuff.
And then the next guitarist who tries to play it, it's gonna
like,
just. Now, one of the songs you mentioned, Emily, is that based on a real person?
Yeah.
What's the story behind it?
It's about a lover of mine, and the song is sort of, I used sort of an idea of like a soldier coming home from, you know, really turbulent war and dealing with that and having to sort of find normalcy in a relationship and not being present with his lover. And I sort of used sort of, like in my head when I was writing it, I saw this soldier, and but it's basically about me coming home to my girlfriend. As like sort of like a road warrior, you know, being on the road and being damaged and us trying to sort of find each other again. And yeah, and I love that. That's actually, to tell you, she's probably one of the most favorite songs I've ever written of my own.
Now, the title of the album, Dirty King, mm-hmm. What is a dirty king in your opinion? It's for all of you.
I am your dirty king. No, to me, it's sort of a, it's like the double personality. It's somebody who, to everybody else, looks like they're on top of the world, but inside, they're not, that's not what they're feeling. So it's almost like it's the facade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, I've never really thought about it that much, to be honest.
Because I am your dirty king.
Because Lucas is my dirty king. That's all I was thinking.
He's the king.
Like,
we just know what the king says.
Yeah, that was pretty.
It's not our job to ask the questions. We just do the work.
It's good to be the king.
Good
to be the king.
Well, Brian's got a new version of the song. It's called I Am Your Burger Cook. I Am Your Burger
Cook. What's your name?
Yeah, we do. We had his little version. He was singing it the other day. I am your burger king.
It'll come out on the box set. Don't worry. Yeah. Just y'all hold tight.
Now, the video for that song is strange, but it's really cool. And I'm curious to know what the symbolism is behind the black and white goop that is seen thrown away, as well as the woman in the bathtub with the eyes drawn on her eyelids. Or was that just something that looked cool at the time?
You can talk to the director about that. I think that, you know, I truly believe that everybody has their medium. My medium is music, and when I choose to work with a director, their medium is film and visual, and he brought that to the table, and I thought, I something about the essence of what it showed visually was something that it somehow sparked something in me when I saw it, and I started when he showed me the storyboard. I was like, I don't know how to explain this to you, but this feel like really resonates with me emotionally. It's not necessarily what I was seeing in my head because they're my own emotions, but I just said, you do what you have to do. And I think what he was trying to get out of all that stuff was that it was basically about this idea of being in a really dark place. It's like the beauty of darkness.
Awesome. Yeah. Now, Brian and Toby, with both of you taking the reins as the drummer and the bassist, did you have to try and copy the style of the original songs, or did Lucas let you bring out your own style to the original tracks?
I think I remember early on having a conversation with Lucas saying, like, you know, how close do you want me to stay to, you know, the original tracks? And when he's like, you know, as long as you keep the essence, like, do what you want to do. And I think that was, you know, it allowed a lot of freedom. I think that I have stuck pretty close to the stuff that Jen had laid down on, you know, this album, and Jordan had laid down on the last. But there's, you know, definitely my own inflection. I think that I'm a more aggressive player than both of them. Like, you know, so my attack is a lot more, you know, a little bit more driving and such. But I think
your sound's different.
But, yeah.
You have a very different, which I love.
But I mean, the parts themselves on the albums are fantastic parts.
Yeah.
They're both, you know, tremendous players, and so that definitely informs a lot. And then you just bring your own personality and energy to the actual performance.
Now, Lucas, just recently you took part in the recording of People Have the Power for the Friends of War Child CD, which is for the nonprofit organization War Child Canada. How did you get involved in this project, and what sort of work outside the album do you plan to do for the organization?
Well, this is a pretty recent situation. I was actually asked to do an event that they do on a yearly basis. They have one day where they get a bunch of artists from the Canadian music industry, and mainly from around the Toronto area where I live. They call it Busking for Change, and they ask for musicians to go out on the street and play their music and collect money for War Child. So I got involved that way. I did that, and then when I did that, they were putting together this compilation, and they asked if I wanted to come in and do a part on the song. I was like, of course, I would love to. And then I met with one of the women who runs it. Her name is Lisa Harmer, I believe. And she, you know, told me all about the organization. I basically already knew about it. And they asked if I wanted to be involved in any future things, and I was like, of course. So I'm just sort of waiting around for another opportunity. I mean, there's nothing better than supporting, like, you know, war-torn children with your music and trying to do something for that, because God knows they need it.
Absolutely. Really. I mean, even since the time of when Bob Geldof did the whole Live Aid thing, it's been, almost 25 years, really.
Amazing. I love, that was, like, very inspirational. Yeah.
Definitely. Now, you are a member of a very prestigious group of Canadian indie artists, which include Fucked Up, Tegan and Sarah, Broken Social Scene, and the New Pornographers.
Mm-hmm.
Given the stronghold of talented Canadian artists that are still kind of under the radar, do you think a sort of Canadian music boom will happen anytime soon in America?
I think it does happen, and I think that it goes unnoticed because people don't realize that they are Canadian artists. For example, Arcade Fire,
yeah,
Canadian artist. Years ago, one day, this woman was listening to this CD here. I was here, and I was like, oh, she's Canadian. And she's like, Alanis Morissette is Canadian? I'm like, oh, yeah, Alanis Morissette is Canadian. So we're around everywhere. It's just that I think sometimes people don't, when they hear a really specific type of mainstream music, they don't actually realize that it's, you know, Canadian, because it's been so, like, Americanized.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Americans are so American-centric.
Right.
You know, we don't think that anything could come from anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. We have everywhere. Guess Who? Rush.
Celine Dion.
Celine Dion's
but
Canadian.
We don't like to talk
there
about Celine Dion.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, they'd probably be expecting the Canadian music to end their songs with eh.
Eh. Yeah, I know. I am your dude. King, yeah. That's why I go, yeah.
Now, tell us a bit about your choice of opening act, Hunter Valentine. Where did you first meet, and have you ever collaborated with them before?
Hunter Valentine are a band from Toronto who I have actually personally known for a very long time. I've known those guys for like at least 4 or 5 years. So we sort of came from the same music scene, and as we sort of grew as bands, we got signed to Tommy Boy, and then last year, it was this year actually, they got signed to Tommy Boy. So now we're label mates.
Awesome.
And so it just makes sense for us to tour together, and not only because we're label mates, but also because they're a fantastic band, and I think we have very similar energy in what we do, in passion. I haven't collaborated with them yet, but I think me and Kiyomi might, you know, try to write a couple of songs together.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Now, has there been any talks of recording new material with the new lineup?
Absolutely. I think one of the first things that we're going to try to get to, you know, in between our time on the road, we have a big tour that we're starting to plan for March and April. And my guess is that we'll try to do some writing on the road, and it'll be a lot of emailing of files back and forth, you know. And,
does this sound good? Or does this sound good?
Right, exactly, yeah. And you know, the game plan, I think, will be to just get together before tours, work on songs, and do some traveling up to Toronto, too, you know. Doesn't have to be all on your side, honey.
Oh, it's okay.
We'll come to see you, too.
Thanks, buddy. So, I love coming to New York, so don't worry about that.
But we'll see. We're going to maybe try to get a live EP out there soon as well.
Yeah.
Was it going to be from like these recordings of these concerts?
If not these, then perhaps from March.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I'm hoping to get to New York sometime before that, so we can have some new material to also put on there.
Cool.
Some extras to the fans.
I'm pretty sure they're going to really look forward to that.
Yeah.
Now, what would you like to say to the fans that have been giving their utmost support to brand new and improved Clicks?
We love you. We love you. We love you. And actually, I think it's such an amazing show of, like, you know, how much, when people love music, they love music. And when you're good to your fans, they're good to you. And to me, like I said this last night at the Knitting Factor show, I think that fans are what make bands do what they do. Like, and it's because of them that we keep going. You know, nobody wants to play to an empty room. And they're who we get to feed, you know, our energy to, and they feed us back. And the most important thing, I think, in music is to have really solid, loyal fans. So thank you.
And I think it's phenomenal, too, like just seeing the show last night and seeing people who, you know, may have been a little bit afraid of change, you know, from the old Clix, and coming out and supporting Lucas and what he does, and supporting, you know, me and Brian, and kind of welcoming us into, like, the Clix fold a little bit. It was really, like, heartwarming, and really, like, you know, this beautiful, like, little love fest that was going on. It was awesome. It was a great show.
Awesome. Now, my final question, and it might sound like a little bit of a weird question, seeing as it is the Christmas season, I would love to ask you, what would you like for Christmas this year, and why?
This is the easiest answer. I want a hardcore, amazing coffee and espresso machine. Please and thank you.
Portable, one that plugs into the guitar.
Yes. I can make it while I'm soloing.
It's powered by music. It tastes like rock and roll.
I think just because I'm not really much of very good at being a gift giver, I really want my girlfriend to be very pleased with the gift that I choose.
That's awesome.
Yes. The gratitude is gratitude enough.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Jeez, I don't. Maybe spring-loaded shoes so I can get to practice faster.
Spring.
Definitely.
We'll be seeing you on the news.
I know.
There's a man on the highway just bouncing all over the place. We don't know why he's doing it.
It's a green initiative. No, it's a psychotic attack of love for the world. No, I don't know.
No, it's a drummer going to practice.
That's exactly right. He's a man on a mission, a spring-loaded mission.
Awesome. Lucas, Toby, Brian, thank you so much for being the first official interview for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
All right.
The album Dirty King is in stores now. It has been bastard tested and bastard approved.
All right.
So until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
And yeah.
Saying sayonara, bitches, and we are the bastards.
You guys are awesome.
I know. That's great, dude. That's
cool.
Great interview.
You should bring some personality.
I have to tell you, that's probably one of the most fun interviews I've ever done.
Thank you.
Very animated human being. It's awesome.